Mind and Body Reset, Modern Wellness Decoded. Science-backed wellness made simple.
You know that feeling when you're walking through the city right after a heavy rainstorm. The air feels cleaner for a moment, but you see that slick rainbow sheen on the puddles and the water rushing into the storm drains. I always find myself watching it and thinking, where does all of that actually go? What is it carrying with it from our streets, our buildings, our lives? That question, it really sticks with me.
It's so true. And for me, the flip side of that is what really got me interested in this topic. I recently spent a weekend doing what people now call forest bathing, just being in the woods. And I was sitting by this tiny, crystal clear stream, watching the water flow over mossy rocks. And the contrast between that image, that feeling of pure, clean life, and the image of city runoff you just described, it was jarring. It made me wonder, what is the cause of that disconnect? Not just to the environment, but to our own bodies, our own wellness.
Exactly. And that is the heart of what we want to explore today. We often think about urbanization's impact in terms of concrete, noise, and air quality. But what if one of the most profound yet overlooked consequences is happening silently, in the water that flows under and through our cities?
And here's the question that I can't wait to dig into. What if the path to mitigating some of that damage, both to our environment and to our own health, doesn't just lie in better technology or infrastructure, but in reconnecting with the very natural systems we've pushed to the margins? Could something as simple as spending time in a forest actually be a part of the solution to a problem as complex as urban water pollution and its effect on our well-being?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I think the answer is yes, but maybe not in the direct A plus B equals C way we might expect. It's not like sitting by a stream magically purifies a river miles away, but it does something crucial to the one thing that can actually change the state of that river, us.
So it's more of a psychological catalyst than a physical one? It changes how we see the problem?
It makes the problem personal. When we talk about urban runoff, we're not just talking about that rainbow sheen of oil. We're talking about a chemical cocktail. Think about it. Everything we use, the brake dust from cars, which is full of heavy metals, the pesticides from city parks, and this is the part that really gets me, the pharmaceuticals.
Pharmaceuticals? You mean like, from people? How would that even get into the water supply?
Through us. Our bodies don't fully metabolize every medication we take. The excess is excreted. It goes into the sewage system and our wastewater treatment plants. Well, they were never designed to filter out those kinds of complex molecules. They were designed for biological waste.
Wait, hold on. So you're telling me that remnants of antidepressants, hormones, painkillers, they're just passing right through the treatment plants and into our rivers?
In many cases, yes. They're what scientists call emerging contaminants, and we're seeing the effects. There are studies showing endocrine disruption in fish populations downstream from treatment plants, male fish developing female characteristics. It's a clear signal that the water is carrying a chemical load it shouldn't be.
Wow. That completely reframes that image of the city drain for me. It's not just dirty water. It's a pharmaceutical delivery system for the ecosystem.
Exactly. And that's where the forest bathing comes back in. When you experience that clean, vibrant stream, you create a baseline in your mind, a sensory memory of what water should be.
So it's not just a feeling of peace. It's a recalibration of your senses.
A recalibration. I like that. It gives you a stake in the game. Suddenly, the idea of upgrading wastewater treatment to include advanced filtration for these micropollutants isn't some abstract policy issue.
It becomes about protecting that feeling, that memory of the clean stream. It's about bridging that jarring disconnect you felt. It makes you demand better.
And it's more than just demanding better filtration, right? It's about demanding a fundamental shift in what we even allow into the system in the first place. We've been talking about these emerging contaminants like pharmaceuticals, but what about the ghosts of our industrial past? The things we dumped decades ago that, well, that never really went away.
Ghosts? What do you mean? Like chemicals that are just sitting at the bottom of rivers?
Precisely. Things like PCBs, flame retardants, heavy metals from old factories. They settle into the sediment, the riverbed. Out of sight, out of mind. But they don't stay put. They get stirred up by storms, by dredging, and they enter the food web.
Oh, wow. So this isn't just about what's flowing into the drains today. It's about a chemical memory that the river holds. That's a heavy thought.
It is. And this is where it gets really personal. And it goes beyond just the quality of the water itself. It's about the life in the water. Scientists have a term for it. Bioaccumulation.
Bioaccumulation. I've heard that before. It's when toxins build up in an organism, right?
Yes, but it's also about biomagnification, how that concentration increases as you move up the food chain. So a tiny organism absorbs a little bit of a PCB from the sediment. Then a small fish eats thousands of those organisms.
And the toxin builds up in its fatty tissues.
Exactly. Then a bigger fish eats hundreds of those smaller fish. And suddenly, that top predator has a concentration of that chemical thousands, even millions of times higher than the water it's swimming in.
And then someone catches that fish. I mean, are we talking about this getting onto our plates? Is that what you're saying?
It's not a hypothetical. There are advisories on fish consumption for rivers and lakes all over the world because of this very issue. Mercury from coal plants, PCBs from old electronics, it's a direct pathway from that industrial ghost in the riverbed to our bodies.
That is deeply unsettling. So my forest bathing moment, that feeling of purity, it's not just a contrast to the city drain. It's a contrast to this invisible, historical poison that we're still contending with.
You see? It changes the stakes completely. That clean stream isn't just beautiful. It represents a functional, untainted food web. It's a system working as intended. When you see that, and then you understand the concept of bioaccumulation, the idea of a polluted river isn't just sad. It becomes menacing.
Menacing is the right word. It feels like a betrayal, almost. You think of a river as this symbol of life and renewal. But in our urban centers, it's become this archive of our worst habits, slowly feeding them back to us.
An archive. That's a powerful way to put it. And it's an archive that we can't just erase. These are persistent organic pollutants for a reason. They persist.
Okay, so we have the psychological disconnect, which the forest bathing helps to bridge. And now we have this tangible biological threat that moves up the food chain. It feels like we're mapping out a problem that's so much bigger than just dirty water. Where does that leave us? It feels a bit hopeless.
I get that. I really do. It's easy to feel crushed under the weight of that chemical archive we're created. But what if that feeling, that sense of it being menacing, what if that's actually the point? What if that's the most powerful tool we have?
A tool? How? It feels more like a weight that just paralyzes you.
Because it moves us past just feeling sad about it. Sadness can be passive, but feeling that a system is menacing, that it's a betrayal, that leads to anger. It leads to demanding accountability. It's the emotional fuel for change. It stops being an abstract environmental problem and becomes a matter of public health, of personal safety.
So you're saying that jarring feeling I had, the disconnect between the forest stream and the city drain, that's not something to run from, but something to lean into.
Yes, exactly that. You lean into it and you start asking different questions. Not just, how do we filter this, but why are we letting these persistent chemicals be created and used in the first place? It pushes the conversation from end-of-pipe solutions to source control. It's about redesigning the system.
Redesigning? You mean like green infrastructure? Things like rain gardens or permeable pavements that filter water before it even reaches the drain?
That's part of it for sure. Using nature's own engineering within our cities. But it's also about policy. It's about a circular economy where the ghosts of our products don't end up in riverbeds. It's about holding the producers of these chemicals responsible for their entire life cycle. That's a monumental shift, but it starts with that feeling of outrage. It starts with refusing to accept the poisoned archive as inevitable.
It's interesting. I came into this thinking about the solution as a personal, internal one, reconnecting with nature to change our own minds. But you're framing it as the catalyst for a much larger, systemic fight.
I think they're two sides of the same coin. You can't have the political will for that systemic fight without a population that is personally, viscerally invested. And you get that investment from the memory of what's been lost, or what could be. That clean stream is the why. It's the reason to fight for the difficult, expensive, and complicated how.
So, when I think about this whole conversation, it really boils down to that one simple contrast. The image of the pure stream and the image of the tainted runoff. And everything we've discussed, the pharmaceuticals, the bioaccumulation, the policy changes, it all exists in the space between those two images.
That's it. That's the entire story. And our job, I guess, is to decide which of those images we want to define our future. It's not just about cleaning up the mess. It's about remembering what clean even feels like, so we have something to aim for.
And to never let that memory become so distant that the rainbow sheen on a puddle starts to look normal. That's a powerful and surprisingly hopeful final thought. Thank you for walking through that with me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope this leaves you with a few new questions to ponder the next time you see the rain washing over the city.